Amish the Buddha, Amish the Dharma, Amish the Sangha. I've been doing some talks on the precepts. I'd like to continue these talks this evening. When we speak of the precepts being non-dualistic, it can sound like a rather intellectual approach to things. It's not really, however. It's very experientially based. So I want to talk a little bit this evening about some of that experience. It can be a difficult thing to understand in practice. Maybe less difficult in theory, but it can be difficult in practice to understand that the essential nature of what we tend to think of as good and of evil is basically the same. This is not to say that it is a wise thing to pursue evil, or as wise to pursue evil as it is to pursue good. It is to say that the essential nature is the same. And what is the essential nature of good and evil? Well, any act that we think of as a good act and any act we think of as an evil act, they're both transitory. Any state of affairs that we think of as a good state of affairs, any state of affairs that we think of as an evil state of affairs, they're both transitory. They share this. They're both transitory. If what we're looking for is an enduring and lasting spiritual refuge, it should be clear that the pursuit of both evil and good misses the point, because it is still the pursuit of the transitory. Again, this is not to say that it is just as good to pursue evil as it is to pursue good. Or just as wise. The law of karma is always functioning. We willfully do that which goes against our own true nature. We willfully do that which blinds us to our own true nature. The result is the deepening of ignorance and the deepening of suffering. Yet if we do that which is commonly accepted as being good, and make that an important goal, if we pursue that willfully, we can also blind ourselves to our true nature. We can get ourselves in quite a desperate state doing good, what we're convinced of as good. In fact, doing what may well be very good, beneficial in many senses. Yet we may so occupy ourselves and work ourselves up into such a lather over it, so busy ourselves, that we are still blinding ourselves to our true nature. This is why River Master, in her commentary in the precepts, speaks of a good that is beyond good and evil, a right that is beyond right and wrong. That good which is rooted in turning towards our true nature and listening, the open-heartedness of offering and willingness, the patience sitting still, and then the doing. So that our actions are truly in harmony with our true nature and do not blind us to it. The good that is beyond good and evil, the right that is beyond right and wrong. That which the world, that which most religion praises as good and condemns as bad, they're both superficial, and they're both externalized, and they both miss the real point. Nonetheless, it is true. It is mostly the case, not entirely, but mostly the case, that that which the world condemns as evil is indeed more of a blinding and confusing element than that which the world calls good. But I say mostly because it's not entirely the case. And worldly ideas of good and evil vary widely and sometimes very wildly from age to age, from culture to culture, from civilization to civilization, society to society. What the precepts are about is something else entirely. They're not about what the world calls holy, what the world calls unholy, what the world calls bad, what the world calls good, what the world praises, what the world blames. The precepts aren't about that. The precepts are about taking refuge in and living from our true nature. A an enduring refuge, indeed an eternal refuge. Not a transitory, effervescent shadow. Not a shadow reality. This does not by any means imply that one can be in any way casual about good and evil and one's attempt to live by the precepts. One has to be aware of them to find a way to negotiate one's way through the maze of good and evil while staying true to one's own heart. Our Master so often cautioned us not to take unrealities for realities. Not to mistake shadows for realities. Not to mistake dreams and shadows for truth. And so it is necessarily the case, not accidentally, but necessarily the case, that the serious effort to live by the precepts throws us back upon pure meditation. We've got to be able to go to that zero reset. Or we will inevitably be, with the best of intentions, caught up in, confused by, and blinded by the shadows. Don't underestimate the complexity, the subtlety of a karmically inherited disposition tendencies. Again, it is one of the great strengths of our Master Jiyu's wonderful commentary on the precepts that it so directly and so consistently views the precepts from the vantage point of deep meditation. So that the precepts become the description of how to live in meditation. by meditation here is meant not a position of the body, but an attitude of mind and heart an orientation of mind and heart that enables us to hold fast to the Lord of the house in the midst of changing circumstances. And when we lose our hold, to find our way back as quickly as possible and re-root ourselves, re-ground ourselves in our wonderful, immaculate, true nature. Every word of that commentary on the precepts shows us how to do this in practice and where the emphasis, where the focus needs to be. A skeptical person could say, well, you call things shadows that I don't think of as shadows. You call something real that I have no apprehension of. That I feel that I have no contact with. Such a statement, I would respond, we come to know through our experience and our intuition what are shadows and what is real. And we come to know through our experience and our intuition, the price that we pay for living lost among the shadows. And the benefit of returning to reality. This is not theory. This is something we can prove for ourselves. There are shadows that are very painful shadows. There are shadows that are very pleasant shadows. If one gets lost among the shadows, one will end up in despair. One will suffer deeply. Purpose of that suffering being to show wrong way in great blinking red letters, wrong way. We do not have to live our lives lost among the shadows. We do not have to live our lives believing that what people praise really matters, or what people blame really matters. We do not have to try to be holy or condemn the unholy. Another doubt that people frequently have goes like this. If you say that living by the precepts is beyond good and evil, then what is going to stop you from doing whatever you bloody well please? What is going to stop someone who thinks in that way from doing possibly monstrous things? Her master addressed that with one simple line in her commentary on the precepts. Know that the Lord will never break the precepts. To live, to train oneself beyond good and evil as the world understands these things, as indeed most religion understands these things, is not to be immoral or amoral. It is to live in a way that, to the best of one's ability, is in harmony with that which is the very quintessence of goodness, with that which is incapable of doing harm, with that which loves infinitely and is infinitely benevolent. That which seeks only to help every being be a success in the very finest sense of the word, in its own way. This is just the way it is. This is what lies at the heart of the universe. It just so happens that the essence of things is good with a capital G. The essence of things is immaculate. The essence of things is compassionate and wise. To train this way is not to be amoral, it is to live in a way that naturally manifests what morality truly aspires to be. Thank you.
Strong.